south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, you know, I have quite a few listeners in Venezuela, believe it or not. I get emails from people there all the time. And man, if you've got dollars down there right now, you rule. However, if people know you have dollars, you could get mugged or disappear. Because, you see, the official exchange rate for U.S. dollars to bolivars is 6.3. That's 6.3 bolivars to the buck. But now, things are so bad, especially since the price of oil is quite low, comparatively. And that's pretty much the only export they've got. The so-called black or gray market exchange rate, the dollar to the bolivar, is 79 times the official rate. Meaning, of course, if you take a dollar down to the bank, you'll get 6.3 bolivars, because banks operate at the official rate. They have to. But if you walk across the street, you'll find the money changers will give you, get this, 500 bolivars for $1. That's 6.3 versus 500, which is why nobody, I mean nobody, is using banks in Venezuela to change to the local funny money. That is, nobody except importers and exporters who have to use the banking system, which is why there's a shortage of everything, including toilet paper, Tampaxes, and of course, like I've mentioned in the past show, believe it or not, butt and breast implants too, which is why Venezuelan women who are just in love with plastic surgery are slipping across the border to Colombia to get those surgeries done. So those formerly somewhat wealthy Venezuelan docs are actually selling off some of their prized possessions. I mean, they have to maintain their somewhat higher standard of living now, don't they? So they're selling off their newer high-end cars and trading down. Now, the only thing that's ridiculously cheap or virtually free over there is gasoline. Because, like I said in a past show, you can fill up for around 15 cents. But then again, you have to have a car first. And now, it turns out, only about 2% of the Venezuelan public can afford to buy a car, even a rusted-out junker. So new car dealerships are virtually empty. Most have gone bankrupt, except for the ones that are supplying parts and maintenance. Anyway, Venezuela has the highest inflation rate in the Western world, too, now. It's at 68.5% a year. However, as usual, since the government publishes those figures, they're total lies, and the people on the street are saying inflation's more like 500% a year when dealing with basic commodities. Meanwhile, as elections will be coming up, President Maduro has jailed his opponent. So much for that populist brand of socialism that always seems to arrive along with a soft-handed dictator. What I mean by that is that there are no firing squads or midnight roundups where dissidents just disappear. But there is no freedom of the press or expression or speech. Now, if you have boots on the ground in Venezuela like I had just about a year ago when the official rate was around 6.8 bolivars to the dollar and right across the street from the bank, the money changers were giving 50 to the dollar. Back then, a year ago, things were very bad. There were lines for milk 3 and 4 blocks long. I thought the place was going to implode any second. And now today, it's 500 bolivars to the dollar. 1,000% worse. And now they're telling me the Chinese have arrived to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Yep, and they're taking no prisoners. Leasing, renting, buying up giant tracts of empty buildings and vacant land, and businesses that still have a spark of life left in them. So just like in the book The Art of War, the Chinese are coming in with open arms as rescuers, even saviors. But their real agenda is not hard to guess. In a few years, they'll end up owning and controlling everything there, just like they're doing in Panama right now. And for those of you who've been asking me about the Chinese in the rest of Latin America, that is, off the gringo tourist trail, you will find they do own quite a lot of clothing and maquila businesses and, of course, Chinese restaurants. They're really heavy in apparel and textile production and associated import and export. So they own things, but in actuality, they're not very visible at all. For example, if you're walking around town in a Latin big city or in any shopping center, low, medium, or high end, you might spot an Asian shopper or two, but I'd say only about 1 in 500 people down here is Asian. So Whole days can go by when you're doing your shopping and your chores and you just might not see an Asian person at all. Except, of course, if you're in Panama or, believe it or not, Argentina, where they seem to be buying up that place too. You can't go shopping or walk around in a fairly busy area without seeing an Asian person or 10 every couple minutes. Because, you know, the Chinese own the Panama Canal and everything around it. Do a search, you'll see what I mean. Now, it might sound like I'm painting all Asians with the same broad brush, but that's what Latins do 24/7. To them, every Asian is simply a Chino. That means Chinese, South Korean, Japanese, Vietnamese, it doesn't matter. They're all Chinos to Latins. C-H-I-N-O-S. The average Latin makes absolutely no distinction between Asian countries. Why? Well, that's because Latins are geographically and culturally ignorant. Sound familiar? Now, of course, Latins don't know any better. They're not mean-spirited about it, but since everyone's a Chino, Asians have to accept they're going to be called that. Now, I know they don't like it, but if they're going to live in Latin America, that's life. For example, a South Korean guy that I know just despises being called a Chino. But he puts on a happy face and bites his tongue because he knows it's futile to try to explain the differences. And like he said, when he does try to explain, they nod and smile, but the next time he sees them, he's back to being a Chino again. So except for Panama, Argentina, and Venezuela, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, you'll see a very, very, very minute population of Asians, and the only time you might run into them is if you're shopping at a convenience store. They seem to own a lot of them, and they're heavily involved in retail, wholesale, and manufacture of clothing items. So if you're shopping at a cut-rate clothing store, you just might notice that one of the guys or gals hanging around is an older Asian person, the owner. Oh, and by the way, by now I believe Panama has 3 24/7 Asian television stations. So, you know, there's a high population there. And you'll see a few Asians even running for political office in Panama. You won't see that anywhere else in Latin America. So then you might ask, and a lot of people ask, I get emails like this all the time, they're asking, what about the infiltration of Muslims in Latin America? Because after all, if you're living up in the States right now, I'm sure you've heard the stories of how Muslims are sneaking into the States illegally to join their cells. So what about Muslims in Latin America? Well, I can tell you this. For every 20 Asians, there is probably one Muslim. Meaning you rarely see them, but they are down here. Oh, and by the way, Latins who, like I said before, are very, very ignorant of geography, customs, and cultures of other races, sound familiar? They call everyone of Middle Eastern descent, except the Jewish people, Arabes. A-R-A-B-E-S. Arabes. Translation, Arabs. Of course, if some Middle Eastern person says he's from Turkey, then he'll be introduced as a Turquesa. Or if he's from Palestine, he's Palestino. Or from Egypt, Egipto. But as a general term, they call every one of them Arabes. Now, some Latins will call them Musulmans by their religion, even if they're Christians. It doesn't matter to Latins if they're Arabes, they're Musulmans. In fact, if you explain to the average Latin that some of them are Christians, you kind of get that deer in the headlight look. Like, you're pulling my leg, right? So then, do you run into them sometime down here? Once in a while? I can say I personally probably spot one or two of them every week or so. Imagine that. And I get around. Now, of course, in every medium and large Latin city, they have their Middle Eastern restaurants owned by so-called Arabes. And by the way, those restaurants are the general gathering places for the farfalle and hummus crowd. In fact, every time I go to a Middle Eastern restaurant, you know, when I need my hummus fix, I'll generally see 5 or 10 Middle Eastern people hanging around eating whatever. And that's the most so-called Arabes I've ever seen in one place at one time. So besides Middle Eastern restaurants, where do these guys live and work and hang out? Well, in every medium and large Latin city, there'll be a dirty, grungy, low-end commercial district, usually in one of the older parts of town, places where poor and average Latin people shop because it's dirt cheap there. In other words, tons and tons of pirated stuff. That's where you'll occasionally see a so-called Arabi-owned business. Jewelry, sometimes clothing, import-export. The fact is, it's rare to go to a medium or high-end mall, for example, and find any stores that are owned or operated by Muslims or Arabis. Oh, and notice that down here, nearly every Middle Eastern woman follows a strict Muslim code. For example, when you're in a mall or commercial center and you see one of them pushing a kid or just walking around, you will notice that if it's a couple, the guy will be pretty westernized. Maybe he'll just have a little beard. But the woman, she'll be all burqa'd out. She'll be covered nearly from head to toe in typical Muslim woman fashion. So the Muslim and Arab guys down here can play fast and loose with Western culture and fashion. However, their women, they're still stuck back in the 15th century. I guess they have to be, because you know, if they don't, the consequences can be severe. So, contrary to popular first world beliefs, Latin America is not overrun or flooded with a steady train of Muslims or people from the Middle East. Oh, they're here all right, but very, very conspicuously inconspicuous. And about those infamous mosques, well, in a fairly big city like, for example, San Salvador, it's a city in the metro area that has about 1 million people, and you'll see a grand total of 2 small mosques. Same thing with Guatemala City. They've got 1 mosque. And Guatemala City's got about 2 million people, which really proves what a tiny, tiny fraction of the population is made up of Middle Eastern people. Oh, and here's a little story for you. One Latin lady I know owns an upscale spa in a very nice upscale commercial center, first world all the way. You know, it's one of those places where you can get aromatherapy and hot rocks on your back, facials, massages, saunas, Botox, laser, lipo, skin fillers. So, you know, it's your typical ladies upscale spa, although maybe 20% of her clients are guys. And she tells me that every 3 weeks or a month or so, a couple of Arabi guys will come in, Middle Eastern guys, you know, usually buddies in pairs and always a different group every time. Now, she emphasized to me that she has no repeat Arabi customers. Why? Because she says when they come in, their Spanish is always pretty horrible, they come in for just one thing, a massage. And they always assume that it's one of those so-called happy ending massage parlors, which that place isn't and never was. It's obvious, looking at the place, it's high class. And those happy ending parlors are always in seedier sections of town. Anyway, the owner tells me when these Arabi guys come in, they want a massage. And the ladies working there always report back to the owner that these guys make absolute pests out of themselves when they find out there is no happy ending. In fact, she says some of these guys insult the massage therapist and they have to actually have him ejected. So down here in Latin America, at least, there's a huge double standard going on. The Middle Eastern so-called Arabi guys westernize themselves and hit the happy ending massage parlors while the women are stuck with the kids and the burqas. So then people have asked, what about the Jewish element? Well, I can tell you this. All throughout Latin America, in the capital cities, there is an Israeli embassy. And man, they're so fortified and triple protected, they make the other embassies look like prefab mom and pop shops. Well, I guess it's nothing more than you might expect because they're always getting hassled all over the world. Anyway, there is a Jewish contingent in every medium and large Latin city, so all cities have a temple or two. Also, quite well guarded and looked after. And note, unlike the so-called Arabis in Latin America, the first wave of the Jewish contingency came down a long, long time ago, sometimes 100 or so years ago. Which is why if you ever do meet a Jew down here, and there aren't many of them either, some are so Latin Americanized that they don't even speak English, or Yiddish for that matter. In fact, over the years, I've met quite a few Jews that look absolutely like Latin Americans too. No, they're not exactly short, dark, and brown. They're tall, dark, and brown. Obviously, because it was their Jewish ancestors that came many decades ago and intermarried to some degree with the locals. Now, note, like I said, the Jewish contingency in medium and large Latin cities is very, very small, but they have a lot of power. Turns out, a huge proportion of businesses, business centers, high-rise projects, hotels, agricultural land holdings, coffee plantations, Coca-Cola franchises, etc., are owned by long-standing, very established Jewish families. And note that sometimes when you look in the back pages of the newspapers, in the obituary section, you'll see someone who recently died with a typical Latin name like Juan Carlos Mendez, followed by a common German Jewish mother's last name like Stein or Cohen or Goldberg, or vice versa. What that says is some families who've been down here a very long time have intermarried somewhere along the line, so Latin names are mixed with some Jewish names. So basically, that small Jewish contingency down here in most of Latin America is generally very well off, very well organized, very cultured, very educated, and at the same time, very Latinized. Not to mention, as families with old money tend to be, quite low profile too, and even with all their holdings, pretty much keep to themselves. Now, in the last maybe 30 years, a certain younger Jewish contingent has come down because of all the outsourcing that's hit the first world. So, nowadays, you have a younger, often wealthy too, Jewish contingent in the textiles, fabric, and clothing factory businesses. And these guys, as you might have figured, are 100% American businessmen. They're typical gringo expats just like me, except for the fact they have a lot more money and are pretty much in a specific industry, the clothing and textile biz. So even though, for example, in the whole country of Nicaragua or El Salvador, there are maybe only 2,000 Jewish people total, you'd never know it. Now, I got that number from one of my close Jewish friends. How else would I know, right? Anyway, even though their numbers are so very small, they have great influence down here in commerce, business, and industry. So, like I said, you have the old, very well-established Jewish families that own a lot of big properties and control, in some cases, whole industries like hotels and coffee. Though, you'd never know that as an expat when you come down here unless you actually met some Jewish people who could then explain that all to you. Because if, for example, you were to ask the concierge in the Hotel Intercontinental in Panama, just who owns that hotel? Chances are the person would rattle off the top guy's name, Jose Fernando Flores Martinez, whatever, without even knowing at all there was a Jewish connection, which is as it should be. Who cares, right? So the Jews that have been down here many, many years blend in with Latin society perfectly. And you know, a lot of the newer arrivals, like I said, that are in the clothing industry doing the outsourcing down here, they end up dating and marrying regular, beautiful Latin girls who oftentimes don't happen to be Jewish at all. So there's a lot of mixing there going on too. And since, from what I understand, the Jewish blood passes through the mother, a lot of these ladies will convert to Judaism just so the kids will be brought up in the traditional Jewish faith. Now, the funny thing is, like I said, a lot of newer arrival Jewish guys, that means in the last 30 years or so, they've married beautiful Latin women, and these women are dyed-in-the-wool Catholic. I mean, that's the culture down here, right? And then, generally due to a bit of pressure from their husbands, they will convert to Judaism, though they hardly ever buy into it hook, line, and sinker. They just do it for the kids' sake. Because you know that Catholicism and Christian stuff dies hard, that's for sure. In fact, as far as Latin Americans go, it never really dies at all, which is probably why I never met a Latin atheist or even agnostic. Oh, and by the way, in every Latin country, there's a tiny, tiny contingent of Hasidic Jews, too. And believe me, they really keep to themselves. You know, the guys in the black robes and the funny hats and the curly Q hair falling down by the ears. But you have to be down here a long, long time to ever see one of those guys on his home turf. There's just so few of them. I think in my 25 plus years down here, I've only seen maybe 10 or 15 total at most. So they are here and they're tight little groups. And they prefer to remain isolated from the rest of the Jewish population in the neighborhood, even though it's a very, very small population to begin with. Like I said, between Nicaragua and Salvador, maybe only 2,000 people. Now, to tell you the truth, some of the American-born expat Jews living down here are sort of embarrassed by the whole Hasidic Jew thing. And they've told me so. I've heard some of my Jewish buddies say that if it wasn't for these guys who just stick out like a sore thumb, there'd be a lot less Jewish backlash around the world because, well, they just refuse to blend in. And when you move to someone else's country, it is all about blending in now, isn't it? So, bottom line, if you're an Arab, you can come down and find like-minded souls. If you're an Asian, or as they say, a Chino down here, you'll find like-minded souls. If you're Jewish, you'll find like-minded souls. Bottom line, whatever ethnic group or race, you will be able to find commonalities down here if you so choose. Not that you'd necessarily want to, but it is an option. In fact, one of my Jewish friends in the garment business actually wanted to find himself a nice Jewish wife. Sure, he had Latina girlfriends over the years and was in love a few times, but he decided he wanted to have a more conventional Jewish family thing. In fact, he was a non-practicing Jew and he didn't want to marry a Latin girl and go through the conversion process because he knew he probably wouldn't hold up through it. That's what he said. So even though he was practically an atheist, he joined the temple just to find himself a nice Jewish wife. And he did, and now he's got his family and he's living happily ever after. So, like he said, he got what he wanted, except for one thing. He doesn't believe any of it and can't stand going to temple. Nor does he hang with or even get along with the true believers. And though his wife and kids go every week, they just can't budge him and never will. He likes to say, I found my nice Jewish wife by making a deal with the devil, and now, every Sabbath, she goes to temple and me and my buddy Beelzebub have time to hang out a bit. Okay, changing gears now. Let's go to an email. And this one comes from Robert. He says, Don Johnny, it's fascinating. The price of Bitcoin has risen about 9% in the last week, most likely as a result of the Greek financial crisis. Now, Bitcoin, after being stuck at about 155 pounds, give or take a pound, for many months, before China banned it, and therefore at a time when the Chinese were very much into speculating on it, it was about at 255 pounds then when it took that hit. My guess was that big decline was due mostly to Chinese speculators exiting the market when it was banned. Now, Greece is a tiny little economy, but it's probably the only thing happening right now to account for that 9% rise in Bitcoin after being flat for so many months. Therefore, it stands to reason that when the next or other Mediterranean country goes the same way, the price will be proportionately greater. For example, France is about 12 times bigger than Greece. Italy's bigger by 9 times. Spain's about 7 times bigger than Greece. And Portugal, the same size. Just wait, when something happens to one of those countries, or the U.S., the price of Bitcoin should go to the moon. Okay, Robert, just a little comment about Bitcoin. You know, I like Bitcoin, but traditional forces like banks and governments hate it. And they'll write laws and use any kind of subterfuge to undermine it. So, there's a war going on, which is why I believe it's so artificially low right now. But the upside is, even if it's very low, if you do it right, you can move money in and out of countries very anonymously with Bitcoin. Now, if you're buying and selling just to speculate, well, that's an option too. Your logic's right. It should go to the moon. It makes sense that when traditional economies collapse, people rush into Bitcoin. So basically, Bitcoin rises on international crisis and falls on forced government market manipulation, like, for example, China banning it. So my advice is to have some foreign property, some gold and silver in your possession, and some Bitcoins. Not to mention at least 6 months' worth of U.S. cash stuffed in your mattress, perhaps. Why? Because you'll need it when the banks and the ATMs crash. Like Robert said, Greece has crashed, the ATMs have closed, and so have the banks. Which begs the question, what are you going to do when it happens in Milwaukee or Cleveland? Got a plan B? Are you ready for that? Okay, on to another email. This one comes from one of my repeat Expat Wisdom seminar attendees. I do have repeat offenders, you know. In fact, he's living down here in Latin America right now. His name is Captain Mango, a self-anointed slash appointed tropical superhero. I guess we needed one, didn't we? Now, some of you might recognize him from a few of the emails he sent to Richard Martin's show lately. Anyway, Captain Mango's email seems to be a response to an email I read a couple of weeks ago on the show. It came from a listener in the UK who said he'd never come to Latin America because he figured it was too poor, too chaotic, and too dangerous. You can go back in the archives and listen to that show if you want to catch up. But here's Captain Mango's response to that. And remember, Captain Mango's a super gringo of sorts who's been living down here in Latin America for some time now, so he does have an inside track. He says, and I'll paraphrase this a bit here. Dear Johnny, after listening to the last couple shows of yours, I feel I need to quote Strother Martin and Cool Hand Luke. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Some people you just can't reach. Specifically, that UK listener of yours who said that the Third World had hygiene issues, etc. The fact is, he ought to be looking in his own backyard. Did you know it's a fact that a recent study shows that 25% of all people in the UK have measurable fecal matter on their hands? 24/7? And he says the Third World has hygiene issues. You know, he strikes me as the kind of chiseler who buys a book, reads it, scans it, gives it to his friends, then asks for a refund. A guy who just wants free information forever and would never really fork the dough over to attend one of your seminars. Johnny, I don't think he's got a clue what your seminar can do for an expat wannabe. Now, as to his comment that he thought there may be some developing animosity towards gringos that are wealthy and look down on the impoverished down there in Latin America, well, unless you are a Thurston Howell III anal type, you need not worry. There are plenty of wealthy, arrogant Latino anal types to treat the poor like crap, and they will far outdo any pretentious gringos in that effort. Though I do advise any snooty, uppity expat wannabes to drop that act, or you won't have many friends down here either. The key is to treat Latin folks fair, whatever class they come from, and any time you can, try to help them to help themselves. You reap what you sow, and you sow what you reap. Now, concerning the dilemma of wannabe couples emigrating to Latin America, you could say I'm somewhat of an expert on that topic. That's what forced me, Captain Mango, into early retirement. After being shot through the heart, only to be revived by multiple mango and tequila transfusions, I realized the folly of trying to save the weaker sex in the hood from their food stamp and Obama phone addictions, etc. Like most failed plans, the couple expat thing does work on paper. Anyway, if it doesn't work out, there are plenty of truly loyal partners with much less baggage available down here. As far as what's happening with me down here in Latin America, the war on killer coconuts has failed, as has the war on gravity. Now, you, Johnny, have pointed out there have been more people killed by coconuts in Latin America, about 150 people a year, than people killed by terrorists and sharks up in the U.S. in the last 10 years. I'll have you know I was involved in that battle with coconuts and gravity involving tequila as a weapon, and, well, gravity won. Coconuts, you know, are pesky creatures with a mind of their own, and you can't be everywhere and save everyone, unless, of course, you place a camera on every single coconut tree in Latin America. So we'll need some government funding for that one. And don't forget, we'll need an adequate drone force, too. Yes, so naturally, Obama will have to appoint a coconut czar. And herewith, I nominate Al Sharpton. Oh, and by the way, for all those gung-ho sphincter wipes who want to join a terrorist organization, why not join the U.S. military, the largest and best-funded terrorist organization in the world? And you don't have to go alone. You could go with a lot of other like-minded pinheads, and that's just what they'll treat you like when you're out and disabled from coconut war syndrome and have to go to the VA for treatment. Anyway, Johnny, feel free to read some or all of this as you please. Regards, and may much tropical fruit and many mangoes grace your life. Sincerely, Captain Mango. Thanks for that, Captain. And by the way, I'm in the midst of my seminar right now, so I'll be reporting on that next week.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.